Hi, everyone. So it's really to be here today to kind of take what we've done in digital archives through to the next phase. Essentially what we're doing at present, and you might have seen some communications coming out from State Records in the last week or so, is moving the digital archives from project to business as usual. And so my aim with this presentation is to show you some of the elements of that that are going to be of particular interest to you as people who will potentially be interacting with digital archives, and talk a bit about how our processes work, the tools we've developed, and a look at what's going to be coming up for digital archives. And I know that I gave a presentation at the last Records Managers Forum in which I touched on some of the thinking behind the development of our approaches and the scope of the digital archives work. But for both the benefit of people who weren't at that event and also just to ground us in a bit of context, I'll just touch on some of that now. What are we archiving? So just as State Records accepts and preserves and makes available physical records of government that are eligible to be retained at state archives under an authorised retention and disposal authority that are no longer in active use and that are covered by an access direction, so we do in the digital archives. The difference, of course, is that we're talking about born digital databases, email, web records, potentially digitised paper-based records that have been part of business processes in agencies might ultimately make their way to us in the digital archive. We're not a digitisation program, so we're not about converting paper into digital for access and use, although, as Jeff mentioned earlier on, State Records is engaged in that very important work as well. We're not about storage or backup. It's not just somewhere that you can put stuff. What in fact we're doing is offering the tools and services to ensure that these critically valuable records of government are preserved and made available for government and ultimately for the public of New South Wales as part of the State Archives, and that means that they're accessible and usable forever. So of course that involves a lot of understanding what you've got, developing approaches to its stabilisation and preservation, and working out how best to provide access. So that's really the value of the digital archives capability at State Records, over and above the fact that we do also custodially store stuff as well. And in developing our approach to digital archives, it was apparent to us in the team pretty early on that there were some aspects of the way government information is created and maintained and used today that would directly influence the approach we took. So, for example, as I'm sure all of you know, New South Wales government is characterised by a very wide array of systems, systems that capture information in a wide range of formats. They're proprietary systems, they're shared systems, they're online, increasingly we're finding them in the cloud, and that uniformity is not, and I suspect increasingly won't be, a feature of the New South Wales government information landscape. And there's a wide range of quality, and by that I mean government information that is kept as evidence of business comes in all shapes and sizes, and indeed is the good, the bad and the ugly. And I'm sure everyone's record-keeping systems here come into the very good category with beautifully structured metadata, clear business rules and well-documented systems for how your digital records are made and kept. But of course, we also had to look at the reality that in some parts of government and in some particular business areas, critically important information and potentially archival information hasn't had the advantage of that good management of strategically implemented metadata, of thinking about how that information is going to be retained long term. That's just a reality of the situation. So it was important for us to devise an approach to keeping those records as archives that would acknowledge those realities. But at the same time, while there's all that diversity and complexity out there in government, as an archive, we recognised a need to, if you like, normalise or to create an environment that was manageable for us. So to bring some order to that complexity. We weren't going to be creating a place for a whole lot of different proprietary systems that we would have to maintain. We weren't going to be setting up a technology museum. Nor did we want an unsustainable situation of wildly varying ways that information was stored that would be difficult for us to monitor and ensure that we were continuing to carry out the necessary health checks on what we had in the archive. So essentially this was a big systems integration challenge, and anyone who's worked in an agency that's had to integrate disparate systems, maybe as part of agency mergers or demergers, restructures and so on, knows that that's no simple task. The other consideration for us at the archive side was recognising that once we accepted and preserved this information, it would be with the archive forever. And as we've heard this morning, technology change is only becoming more rapid. And so what we implemented needed to be comprised of technology that would not cause headaches for future digital archivists down the track when they were looking to upgrade, to move into the next generation of technologies, and just to take advantage of some of the fantastic tools that appear to solve particular digital records, digital preservation problems. So that ability to decouple the archives from the technology that manages the archives was a very important consideration. And taking a modular approach to the technologies that we use so that we could swap in and swap out as was deemed necessary. So for all of those reasons, and a few more that I'll speak about, our approach is based around a migration approach, a systems migration. Each instance of records that are to come into the archive are migrated using the sort of techniques that any of you who've been involved in a system migration would find familiar from your own experience. I was just talking to someone just before we started and talking about this approach, and I said, well, partly because every system is a special snowflake. Every system is unique and has unique characteristics. Even where you're talking about EDRMS systems deployed across government, I think you'll agree no two TRIM implementations are identical. So our approach looks at the system that the records are in, and looks at how best they can be migrated into that normalised environment of the Digital State Archive. And I'll be explaining exactly the processes that we use as part of that migration shortly. But just to emphasise, it is a bespoke, a custom approach to each migration project. But importantly, we're at the beginning of a digital archives capability for state records, and each project results in knowledge capture. It results in identification of techniques, tools, export functionality, ways of working with digital information in a variety of systems environments that can be repurposed and reused. So while it sounds like a big project that we have to do, as time moves on and we've captured more and more of that knowledge, these projects will have the opportunity to become more streamlined. I wanted to draw your attention to the fact that the migration methodology is available now on the State Records website. And I'll particularly mention that there are some handy checklists. We all love a checklist. Love a checklist. Which touches on the requirements of each of the four phases. As you can see, the phases represent a sort of very simple systems migration project format, and we've also got it available as a handy printable PDF. Just alt-tab back. It's also important to note that this approach has been designed bearing in mind the need for flexibility to cope with the simple projects that will be run quickly and in a straightforward way, or ones of more complexity. It can cope with custody and non-custody. What do I mean by that? We're prepared for the eventuality that in some cases we may not physically take the data that is in that particular migration project. Our Act provides for distributed management. Records, digital records may end up residing somewhere outside of our physical control, and this methodology can cope with that. And I'd like to acknowledge Paul Elliott, who's here today, there he is, who was the primary author of the Digital Archive Migration Methodology before he took up another opportunity and abandoned us at Transport New South Wales. So thank you, Paul. Okay, so how does it work? First of all, you make contact with the Digital Archives team. And that may happen by a variety of methods. All of you who've been dealing with state records over the years know that we keep in contact with agencies. Matters relating to the long-term management of records talked about face-to-face, by email, at meetings and so on. But one way or the other, we come into contact with you to talk about the future of digital records that you believe require migration into the archive. We start a project together. So phase one of the methodology is essentially determining the scope, responsibilities. We get a general sense of the records that that we're dealing with. We confirm their eligibility for transfer into the archive. And we also, at that point in our team, look at, well, have we actually dealt with records or records from a system like this before? What knowledge can we reuse? And supporting the management of the project, we have a couple of tools. We have a project plan template, which we work on with you and which eventually gets agreed to by State Records and the agency, setting out the parameters of the project. And we have a project management environment using a tool called Basecamp where we can track progress, send each other messages, bring in other people into the conversation. Maybe you'll bring in your IT people, maybe we'll bring in someone else that we need to get some advice on. And so that, all of those, that project management area is available from this page on the State Records website, again under the general digital archives area. Once the project plan is agreed, we may indeed actually get copies of the records, perhaps the full set of records from you or samples, and we'll start working on the migration plan. The migration plan is another template that we work on collaboratively that will set out how the records are to be migrated into the archive. And this is probably the point at which I can explain to you a little bit about the process that we follow in preparing and implementing that migration plan. This is an overview of the process, and you can see it starts off with the source records, system X, run of PDFs Y, network directory Z, whatever it might be. And then in terms of developing our migration plan, we go to a phase of analysis and decision making. The analysis of your systems certainly as far as the way we've been working to date has been primarily done by us. But that's not necessarily going to be the case, and we also are looking to work in partnership with people on the ground, systems users, systems owners, people in the agency who really understand how the information in the system was created, what its controls are, very interested in any systems documentation that you have to help us to get a grip on what the records are, how they've been managed, and any special requirements. And as we do that analysis, there are two main aspects to the records that we need to make decisions about for our approach to their preservation to be successful. And those two things are the metadata and the formats. And to support the capture of the decision making that we make about your records and to share that information across government and to the world, we have two online tools. The first is the metadata registry, which essentially allows us to register our preferences for metadata, where we look at a system that comes in and we see metadata that is clearly used for naming records, for uniquely identifying records, for linking records to function. We need a way to register that and to make it relate to the same sort of metadata for other systems that we hold. So it's essentially like a brokering mechanism. And we've published our metadata preferences in a schema, and we've made that available on GitHub. There's the schema. They never look very exciting when you look at them like that. But essentially we're registering preferences around that core metadata. We're using standards. So we're using standards like Dublin Core where appropriate, rather than making up our own stuff. And the important thing about the schema to note is that it's designed to expand and to progressively grow as we encounter more useful metadata that we need to register with the systems that come in and that we're managing in the archive. And that includes business-specific metadata that might relate very much to your area of business, a prisoner identification number for an offender management system of corrections, for example, or some more specialised metadata. So that schema will grow. That schema's available for anyone in government to use potentially and inform their own record-keeping system design, because you'll see, well, this is what the State Archives is calling a name of a record. This is the kind of metadata qualifications or controls that you're putting around dates. So that's available for you to use. The other tool is around how we deal with formats. One of our pilot projects comprised, I think it was around 40 different formats in a collection of file objects of over 40,000. And each one of those, as we analyse the set of records, needs to be considered in terms of how well we feel equipped to maintain that record in that format and ensure its accessibility and usability, and also in terms of eventually making it available online, how usable will that record be for the public. So as we go through and look at formats, what we're doing is we're registering any decisions that we take to create a new copy of that particular format for either preservation or access purposes in the Preservation Pathways registry. This is a registry that pulls format information from the PRONOM registry, which is managed by the National Archives UK. And that's handy because it means we don't have to go around analysing the many bazillions of formats that are out there that we could potentially encounter in the archive. So essentially the registry provides detail on formats and their dependencies. And then in terms of our decisions about what we're going to do with particularly troublesome formats, you'll see those are listed under pathways. So for example, here are some pathways that we've created for email messages and access databases. And you can have a look at what we've decided to do for access purposes with an access database that we weren't able to guarantee would be usable beyond the migration. And not only do we register the format transformation, but we also register the tools that we've used to do the transformations. So that again is a resource not only for the Digital Archives team, but for anyone who is looking at format conversions in their own organisations and wants to know, well, what did the Digital Archives team do with this particular format? What tool did they use? And that will grow over time. So having made that all those range of decisions for a particular project and having used a variety of other tools along the way, as I said earlier on, things that are suited to the purpose of the records that we're actually dealing with, we prepare the migration plan. We document the decisions that we take around metadata, around formats. We look at the timeframes, the process, what validation measures are required, and access arrangements for the records. Then our migrate tool, developed in-house, executes the rules that we've registered around metadata and formats and structures the records into the form that we will be storing in the archive. Once it is created, the records into that form, and you can see an example of, I guess we've called it an archival package that comprises the original record, any versions that we've created for access or preservation purposes, metadata from that we've extracted from the original system and that we've added ourselves for our own management purposes, potentially a preview or full text extracted. The migrate tool then takes those packages, validates the consignment, allocates unique identifiers in the archive, stores the records in our file system and in our metadata store, places a log of exactly what it has done in what we're calling the receipt, and updates our search index. So you can see now we've sort of progressed our way through to the migrate stage in our process where the records are happily wending their way into the archive. And at the close of the project, this is where the control over the records passes to us under the State Records Act. We issue you with a system-generated receipt detailing the records' new IDs, the archive allocated IDs and location, and a log of all the actions that we've taken on them so that we can be accountable for exactly what we've done and that you know what has been done with your records and you can keep that information in your records. And we can advise you on the disposal of source records. So, in other words, can you turn that system off now, please? So in terms of publicly available archives from the Digital Archive, it's important to note that quite a lot of the projects that we've been dealing with are not covered by early access directions, but where they are certainly available, and available in a way that links them to the context entities of the State Records Control System through our search interface. So this is the homepage for searching in the Digital Archive. And at present, you'll see we have one publicly available series, which is our dear departed Premier, Christina Keneally. And we have preserved and now are making available media releases from her office. You can browse through the media releases. You can sort them by date or indeed by title. And I'd just like to show you what a preserved record looks like and some of the aspects of that that will be common to the records that are preserved in all future projects as well. So Christina's very first media release, she was a fresh-faced, enthusiastic new Premier. It's a viewer which is appropriate for this particular format, a thumbnail, the archive ID, the creator of the record, the date the record was created, a link back to the series. Under versions here, you'll see there's just the one, and this is because this is a very stable safe format for us. We made the decision we'd retain it as it is. We'll monitor it over time, and that's a really important feature of the archive, is that because we have the data on all the formats in the archive, we can continually monitor and update and create new versions as required if, say, this particular version of PDF becomes suspect or unsustainable for whatever reason. But at present, there's just the one version. It's possible to view the metadata in machine-readable form, and it's also possible to download the full package or that particular record, which comprises both the original file, any versions, and the metadata. So there's a very standardised structure for how that information is presented in that package. As I said, this is the first look at our search interface where we've just got the one series, but what we'll be doing as the digital archive moves into its next phase is bringing other records from series that are open to public access under early access or because they've reached the early open access phase into this environment, and then it will be possible to search across multiple series. It's important to note this is also linked to the main state records search, which, and by the way, if you haven't used the search tool for the archives, it's a fantastic way to browse around the collection. And so there's the series, and in this instance, when you go down to the location, you're offered a link to actually the records within the Digital State Archive. What's next for the Digital State Archive? Well, we've got new migration projects in the pipeline, and I expect that there'll always be, you know, a number of projects on the go. Some of them quick and dirty, some of them much more substantial and complex. And as that occurs, the knowledge base that the team are using will grow and be able to be reused. And it's really important to understand this, actually, about digital archives, is it's about building capability and knowledge. So we're in the dawn of state records as a digital archive, and it can only get more expert and become a greater source of knowledge, not just for our own purposes, but for across the sector for digital continuity needs. There's going to be enhancements to search, to the digital archive search, I should say, where we've got lots of exciting ideas around how to integrate it further with our high-level contextual information and provide powerful search as the archive grows. And certainly looking at a remote and secure online access to records in the archive that are closed, that the agency may have a need to access from time to time. So as I said, there are all the elements, including the methodology, the tools, and the search, are online now. And there's a fantastic new post up on the Futureproof blog, which details provides more detail on some of the tools and processes that we use in the archive. And I'd probably just like to conclude by acknowledging that I seem to always be the one that talks about digital archives, but it's very, very much a team effort to not only have developed our approach, but be working on and solving problems in digital preservation day to day. And so I'd like to take the opportunity to acknowledge past team members, Damien Newhouse and Not Cromthong, Paul Elliott, who's here, Daniel Gordon, our current systems administrator, who is unfortunately recovering from a nasty unloading of dishwasher accident, and I won't go into the detail, who isn't here. Danny Archer, our systems developer, who developed the very shiny tools that you saw online on the screen today, and Richard Lehane, who's been with a critical member of the team from day one. So thank you, Tim.